This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Wells Tech, a show where we talk about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. We do this every week, Tuesdays, 4 o'clock, but also for your listening and viewing pleasure. You can download it anytime through iTunes and all kinds of different places. Joining me today, we've got one guest and one regular. We'll start with the regular, Sally Draper from New Ulm, Minnesota. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Martin Spriggs from, where is it? Waukesha, Wisconsin. You didn't introduce yourself.
That's correct. I am in Waukesha. We broadcast from the Center for Mission and Ministry, which is the new Wells headquarters, and enjoying that, although very humid today. So that's a small price to pay, however, for the winter we just endured. So a little humid weather is just fine with me. We are also joined by our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Jason Schmidt, Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Martin. Hi, Sally.
How are you?
I am just peachy. You know, the sun is shining here in Omaha. Whether it's cloudy or not, the sun is shining. It's always a good thing.
You always carry a little sunshine along with you.
You know, it radiates from my face, apparently.
Particularly radiant right now as the school year is wrapping up, I bet.
Oh, yeah. Teacher's last day was on Friday, so I got a lot done today. It was great.
Excellent.
Beautiful. We are really happy to have Jason along today, or on board, as they say, because our topic is something that he is really intimately knowledgeable about, something that he's going through in his school district, and that is the Google Play edition for schools or for education. So we're going to talk a little bit about Google Play in particular and what that brings to the table, what Google has up their sleeves for the educational space. But also, and maybe even more specific and interesting, is using tablets, specifically the Nexus 7, which is Google's Play in that space, in the hands of the kids. And I'm really interested to see how that's going and what progress is being made there, because that's a little bit different concept, different ecosystem, of course, than Apple with their products and with the iPad. Google has a play there. And in many respects, maybe more economical, maybe we could say, but certainly fits in nicely with all of our schools who are certainly considering maybe Chromebooks or Google Apps in general and how this all fits in the in that world. So where do we start? What's the first consideration, maybe, Jason, as you're thinking about rolling with Google versus some other ecosystem?
Well, you know, the most important thing to consider when you're considering either, you know, Google Play or Apple or any of that is, what are your learning outcomes want to be? You know, what do you want kids to be able to do? What do you want kids to be able to know? And just identifying those skills. Once you've done that, like that's got to be the most important thing that you address when you're looking at something like this. You know, don't just get it because it's really cool. Even though, you know, it's really easy to do that, or, you know, it'll make our school look really good, or anything like that. You know, you really want to focus on teaching and learning and what does that look like, and then use these things as a tool for how you want to do that. And then once you've identified your objectives for how this is going to shift our teaching and our learning, the next thing to do then is going to be to figure out how you go about doing that and what's the best tool for the job. And in my district, we're kind of the black sheep. Not really black sheep. We're more like a
gray.
Gray, yeah. in that, you know, in Nebraska, something like 95% of our school districts are all Mac, and we're a Windows district. There are a lot of one-to-one programs, and they do iPads or MacBooks, and we don't. We're a BYOD district, which, you know, puts us in like the top two BYOD districts in the state, because there are two that I know of that have an official BYOD program. So we kind of dip our toes in a lot of different things. And the most recent one that we've dipped our toes into is the Google Play for Education. And in my mind, for our district and in our situation, this would be the best solution between this and Chromebooks for a one-to-one program in our circumstances.
But just so we're clear, you've got to pick one, or you really can't. If you're in Google Apps for Education or Google Play for Education, you're really talking about apps that play or work on a tablet, not on the Chromebook, right?
It's not an either or. Okay. It's more of a both and. If you think about a Chromebook, the Chromebook is going to be your web-based kinds of things. So you don't install apps on a Chromebook. You just access a web resource. But if you're using a tablet, that is an app that gets downloaded and installed. You have a little icon. You tap on it. If you're offline, you can use all of those. And you know, we're kind of muddying the waters a little bit because you can use Chrome stuff offline too. The line is kind of getting blurred a little bit. But when we're talking about Google Play for Education, we're talking about a tablet, you know, something. I've got my Wells sticker on this one. See that?
Nice.
That's from the Wells Tech camp. I love these things. I grabbed like four of them just because they're so awesome. Mm-hmm. But you know, if we're talking about something that's like a Nexus 7, that's about the size of an iPad mini. So you know, that's the that would be the hardware that we would be working with the Google Play for Education.
Okay. So John Dorn raised a question that we could probably address right away. So he already owns Nexus 7 tablets. Where does he go and get a license for the admin console? Is that possible?
Yeah, sure is. You can get the management console for the Nexus 7 in the same place that you get them for Chromebooks. So if you work through a third party like Promevo, or around here we go through RTI, Riverside Technologies. They're at CDW, you can buy the licenses. Anybody who can sell you a license for a Chromebook can also sell you a license for the Google Play for Education.
And Jason, you were going to show us that in the admin panel. It's similar to administering Chromebooks.
Yes, I will show you that in the admin panel, and I'll get to that in just a sec.
Okay.
If the one thing that I would caution, not necessarily caution, but just make sure that people are aware, if you purchase a device through a third party, it doesn't matter where it comes from, but if it's already in use, in order to be able to register it with the admin console, it needs to be reset and brought back to factory settings. So you got to keep that in mind if you're working off of something that already has content on it. You can still use that account again, but it has to be wiped before you can enroll it in your organization, kind of similar to a Chromebook.
Right. Okay.
So. All right. So then, in a parallel world, if we bought iPads and went one to one with iPads, we would be dealing with the iTunes Store to add content. And I know that Apple's done some work to do that and make it hopefully easier for educators, some global licensing and things like that. But it's probably not Apple's forte, I would venture to say, as opposed to what you're going to demonstrate for us with the Google Play for Education, managing tablets with the management console installed, that licensing on them is a lot easier, it seems, through Google Play for Education.
Yeah, you know, if you look at a company like Apple, their primary means of income, I guess, is they want to sell you stuff. And by sell you stuff, I mean they want to sell you stuff.
Hardware.
Lots of stuff. Hardware, right. Mm-hmm. They are not, you know, they make something like 30% on every app that they sell, but, you know, the app distribution and that kind of stuff, they really want you to buy more Apple hardware in order to be able to do that distribution. So, you know, you simplify things a lot if you use an MDM, but, you know, the second least expensive one besides Meraki, which is free, is an Apple server. If you want to use Configurator on your iPads, you have to have an Apple computer. You know, that's the only software, the only operating system that it'll run on. Whereas with Google, their business model is they just want you to use their stuff. And that's, you know, it doesn't matter really what you're on or how you do that or anything. It's just they want you to use their stuff. So
you wouldn't necessarily need to use a Nexus 7 tablet. You could have other tablets that could be enrolled as well.
Correct.
Similar to the way the Chromebook works as well, you wouldn't need one particular one.
Right, yeah. Right now, I think Google supports three different tablets. I think there are four. There's the Nexus 7. There's an Asus Transformer. There's an HP tablet, and then there's also a Samsung Galaxy Tab. Mm-hmm. I think it's either the 3 or 4. I can't remember which.
Mm-hmm.
You have your choices for the different kinds of devices that you want, and obviously each of those are each of those are at different price points, depending on what your needs are and what you want to be able to use. And there again, you know, it all comes back to what is your philosophy? What do you want? You know, what do you want kids to be able to think, know, and do? And you pick the device then that matches that.
Okay. So you're going to show us then a little bit about what the Google Play for Education store looks like. And as you're bringing that up, maybe we can discuss a little bit about how licensing works, the fact that you have to set up an account, you submit a purchase order and have a certain amount of money on your management account, and you can parcel that out like to the science department or the math department or whatever, to specific teachers, so they have money to spend. And then as they purchase different licensing, those are applied to the tablets, and they can be retracted and applied to different tablets, if that's what I'm understanding.
Yeah, you know, and everything that Apple did wrong with their distribution model, Google fixed. It is so easy to add an app to supervised devices. It is so simple. And it doesn't take an administrator or a rocket scientist to be able to do it. All that it takes is my screen showing up right here. So if there were a teacher who found an app in here and wanted to send this one out, all that the teacher needs to do after that money has been allocated for use by that particular person, they can just click on install right here. And then it brings up Google Groups. So you can just type in an email, and I would also encourage, you know, if you're using this to have teachers set up their own groups, so that's what Google encourages you to do too. So when you have those groups set up, you just type in the name of the group. So, you know, just real quick here. I just typed in the email address for the group that this would go to. I click on add, and then you see right here, I've got my group shows up right here. It tells me how many are in that group, and then when I click save changes, it just drops down from the cloud right to those devices. No intervention on the end user's part. They don't have to approve it. They don't have to install it.
It just
shows up. That's exactly right. They don't have to do anything.
So what's the pricing like, Jason, on a lot of these apps? And how would you rate the ecosystem? Is it, you know, are there apps for almost anything you'd like to do? Is there, you know, wasteland in some areas? What's the experience like?
Well, the really nice thing about the Play Store for Education is that all of the apps that are in there are vetted. So, you know, you see right up here at the top, it says educator recommended apps right here. And so by default, when I'm browsing through this store, I'm going to find these educator recommended apps. So what Google did was they brought in 60, 70 teachers, classroom teachers, to review apps before they placed them into the App Store here. So, you know, the ones that are in here, you're going to be able to you have a pretty good assurance that they're pretty high quality, and will do the job that you want it to do. Overall, the apps that you find in the Google Play Store are a little bit less expensive. You know, it might be $4.99 in the Apple App Store, and it might be $3.99 in Google Play. But one thing that's different though is if you're purchasing a bunch of different copies, Apple has what's called the volume purchase program, where you can, if you buy 20 apps, you get 50% off. And so for large volumes of apps, the Google Play Store is actually a little bit more expensive, but you make up for it with the ease of distribution, and also the ability to just pull them back, which is really nice too.
Let me interject another question from John Dorn here. It says, should each tablet have its own registered email account as the admin account, or can you have just one email used as the administrator account?
So I just want to make sure I understand the question completely before I answer. There are two different... There are two different ways to set these up. The first way is when you go through and set them up, you can assign an account to that user each time. So the setup process is really super easy. You set up the accounts in, or I'm sorry, it's just a spreadsheet that you make in your Google Drive, and then that account then is linked to that device, and then if you send apps to that account, it just shows up on that tablet. So you should have a separate account for each tablet. If the administrator account, you have to have different levels of access in order to be able to access the Play Store. When you put that supervision on those on the tablets, you need to, by default, it turns off the Play Store for education, it turns off the Play Store period. So you don't have access to Google Play on those tablets when you supervise them. The only way to put apps on them, unless you re-enable that store, is to distribute them through Google Play. So I see, you know, you have a follow-up question that you say all of your tablets are under one account right now. The way to do that is going to be to have each tablet has its own account, and then you have them supervised, and then you can add apps to them as you go and as you need to. So I hope that makes sense.
Sure.
So Jason, let's talk a little bit about getting these devices into the hands of the kids in your school district. Are they bringing in they're buying their own and bringing it to school and then taking it home? It's theirs. Or is there a suite of these that you hand out during class? How's that typically working, and how would you recommend that to work?
Is it fair to say yes? we've got a little bit of both. I do have a set of 36 that I'm going to be preparing for distribution to my teachers throughout the school year, and that'll be a set that they can just check out for special projects and things like that they have going on with their students.
And those are sub-$200, or there's some in that sub-$200 range, are they?
The ones that we have were $229, and then And then if you get the management with them, that's another
$30. That's a one-time, the $30.
And that, correct, yeah. So when you buy the device and you buy the management at the same time, it ends up being about $260 per device, which, you know, if you compare that with...
Half as much as a low-end iPad, right?
Pretty much, right, exactly. So, you know, it just kind of depends on, you know, if you're a little bit more price sensitive, then Google's the answer. But honestly, you know, for me, I like the Google ecosystem, and I think it's, you know, for in a lot of different ways, it just makes my life so much easier working with the volume of devices that I do,
sure.
Not to have to pull in all kinds of iPads on a regular basis to make sure that I update them and all that kind of stuff that goes along with it.
And it seems to me, and I'd appreciate your opinion, it seems to me like the tablet space seems to be a better sweet spot for middle and lower grades, where there's not as much, let's say, paper writing and, you know, content input, because that gets a little bit more challenging in a tablet-only world. Is that kind of how your school district is approaching it, or is it just across the board and you're dealing with content creation in other ways?
We're looking at it more from a perspective of whatever is comfortable for the kids.
Okay.
You know, I have seniors in high school that will submit a paper that they just typed up on their phone, and that's not an unusual thing to hear about or to see. And I had an English teacher who was just all up in arms with me, like, you know, hey, we've got to fix this. These kids are typing their papers on their phones. I said, well, what's the quality of it? You know, I mean, is it passable? Well, yeah, but they're gonna hurt their thumbs. I said, well, then let them deal with it, you know? They'll be fine. This is what they're used to working on, so let's give them an opportunity to work like that. You know, there are pros and cons both ways, and there again, you know, I just keep on coming back to, you got to look at what are your educational outcomes, you know? A tablet is going to be a whole lot better at producing a video or something like that. You're going to have much more powerful tools at your disposal for that, especially if you're shooting video. You know, when was the last time you tried to shoot a video on a Chromebook, you know, using the webcam that's built into it? It doesn't work out so well. So, you know, it just depends on what you want kids to be able to do. Sometimes a tablet's going to be the better option. Sometimes laptop's going to be the better option. Sometimes kids are going to type papers on their phones, and that's going to be okay. You know, but we just by providing kids with the opportunity to choose what tool works best for them is kind of, you know, that's really at the root of our philosophy with why we've chosen to go with the bring your own device. You know, it's not necessarily a cost consideration. It's not necessarily you know, anything to do with what works better or anything like that. It's just, you know, in our study, in the way that we look at things, what's important to us is that kids are able to do X, Y, and Z. And
so you've given them a choice, but it has to be within certain parameters, or
we may be getting a little bit off topic, but I honestly, the only parameter that we have is that it has to be able to access the internet. That's it.
Okay.
You know, because we have anything, any tools that they use or anything that they have available is going to be web-based. If they have a specific app that they want to use and that's something that they've purchased, then they're free to do that. Because we're interested in the outcomes. It's not so much how they get there, as long as they get to where we want them to be.
Jason, I want to put a quick plug in for some online training materials that are available. Recently, you took some quizzing for Google certification about the Google Play for Education store and supporting tablets and that kind of thing. And the training is out there whether you're taking the exams or not, and it's pretty robust. So how to set up and provision tablets, how to browse and search in the Google Play for Education, how to provision content, how to use a purchase order, all of that's covered in this training, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, and that's a really great resource, Sally, and I'm glad that you pointed that out, because, you know, honestly, I could talk about this for hours, and we would run into dinner time, and Martin will get crabby. So, you know, wait, it's one of those things. There's just so many things that you can do with it, but it's so easy. It doesn't really take much to get into it and figure out how it all works, and you know, once you get over the hump, it just kind of clicked, and I was like, oh, that makes sense, and now I'm able to. Now you can fly through it pretty easily. So,
and you're already in the administration panel for Google Apps for Education. If you're using Chromebooks, it kind of makes sense and goes hand in hand to manage your tablets through that same interface as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I pulled that up right here. So, you know, in your admin console, you have to be a Google Apps district in order to be, or a school, sorry. I got to switch audiences here. You have to be a Google Apps school in order to have access to this. But yeah, it'll just show up under your device management, under mobile. And then from in here, you have device management settings. So I have very granular control based on the organization. You know, I can turn on and off sync. You'll be able to see if Google Play for Education is enabled it's underneath Android. That mobile device management settings is going to be in your organization whether or not you've purchased these in the past. But you need to accept an agreement in order to have access to Play for Education. So that's just an additional piece that need to be aware of
no cost to get into that ecosystem just when you start buying the apps.
Right. Well, yeah, and you need to obviously buy the licensing.
The licensing. So,
right. Once you purchase the management, then you have access to Google Play for Education, and you can put that out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wonderful. Please check out the online resources that Sally was referencing if you're interested in this. And I'm sure if you're really serious and want to get into more of the details of Jason's experience, I'm sure he would be willing to act as a resource for that. So please.
Well, I wasn't going to, but since you volunteered me, Martin.
Too late. That's too late.
That's a hazard of being on the podcast, I guess.
That's right. That's in the job description of semi-regular classroom technology.
Read the fine print next time.
Next time, I'll have to think about that one.
That's right. Well, you signed up for life. So right.
Let the sun shine.
Speaking of a Nexus 7 tablet, that's what folks would win if they are the lucky person chosen as a submitter of a listener review. And we had three of those submissions this week. And that's great. There's only 1 week to go because it's next week that we'll be, I believe it's next week, right, Sally, that we'll be drawing names out of hats or however we're going to do it. For the winner of a Nexus 7 tablet, and also our ministry resource category, which is the prize there is an Apple TV. Who, Sally, was the first one this week to submit a listener review, and what did they review?
This week we heard from Tim Giebelhaus. Is that right?
Just Tim. It's fine.
Okay. Tim sent me pronunciation of his name so that I could be sure to get it correct on the podcast. And thank you very much, Tim, for writing to us and sharing your review, which is a great follow-up to last week's podcast where we talked about fitness and using technology to stay fit. And Tim uses kind of a combination of things. He uses an app. He uses a scale. We didn't really get into scales last week, Martin, but scales that communicate your weight Wi-Fi over Wi-Fi and sync with your apps so that you can keep up with your weight changes and things like that. Tim is very disciplined and tracks his food, which I think if you were to talk to dietitians and exercise trainers and things like that, they would say that's just a key component. And by tracking his food with MyFitnessPal, using the Fitbit app to track his exercise, and then the scale from Withings to communicate his weight to those and sync with the apps, he's got quite the system going. And it was really great to read about it. And if you're interested in kind of the ins and outs of how Tim's system works, you'll want to read through this listener review in greater detail. Staying Fit with Tech, it's titled. So check that out.
Second one came from Emil Burgess, a listener to the show, and he's talking about Evernote for ministry. We've talked about Evernote on the show before, and he's a big, I don't know if he's big, but he's a user of the GTD process, getting things done, which I've talked about on the show as well. And he's found a kind of a niche for how Evernote can be used in that getting things done process. And he specifically asked, well, how is it helpful for ministry? And one of his tips here is, I have a note file for each of my members and prospects to which I add info as I see fit, which is kind of a little member prospect slash database, which is, I think, a great use. So I try and update my shut-in note file after each visit. My most used tags are the GTE standards and a couple others, project support, agendas, errands, computer, homework, waiting for calls, read reviews, someday maybe, et cetera, et cetera. He says, I also have a note for each of my GTD horizons of focus. That's kind of the goal setting and vision kinds of things. Current projects is a tag with a note for each outcome, and next action is its own whole notebook. So if you've kind of been through the getting things done process, read that book, or attended it in my classes, some of that will resonate with you. He says, I also use Evernote for a daily journal in which I check off and capture the work I've completed and any miscellaneous thoughts. So if you want to read more about how Emil is using it, he's down at Trinity in Caledonia, Wisconsin. I will have a link to that in the show notes. And thank you very much, Emil, for submitting your listener review of Evernote for Ministry. Nice job.
And then finally, we had one more listener review. This one is from Jimmy Potts, who wrote to us about Lubuntu. I'm not sure if that's how people would pronounce it, but Ubuntu is a Linux distribution. This is the light version of Ubuntu, so they added an L in front for light. And Jimmy has some really great ideas for reviving old hardware by running Lubuntu on it. Since it's so lightweight, it makes for a great operating system. He says he's using it on an early 2009 EPC netbook that he has. And, you know, that's probably something that might be kind of sunsetted by now, but instead Jimmy's able to make use of it with this different operating system. The other point that he brought out, and you can read his review online, was that with Windows XP no longer being supported and actually being kind of a security risk at this point to keep using it, Lubuntu may be a great replacement for that and allow you to keep using your older computer very safely. So, again, check out his review, and if you're looking for a lightweight operating system, this may be the solution for you.
Beautiful. Thank you. So time is running short. If you'd like to submit a ministry resource or a listener review, we're accepting those through next week. Our next week show is on Tuesday, so get those in by the weekend, and we will get them on the show and into the drawing as well. Let's move on to our tip of the week section, and as is per our tradition, I'll go first, Sally second. Jason, you are batting third. So I'll give you a little time to stretch out and warm up. My tip of the week is actually a blog post, but also just a general encouragement. I've kind of fallen to my tips of the week as being just general, you know, if you don't do anything else, you got to do this kind of thing. Last week was phone cases. Use a phone case because I had a bad experience. This one's kind of similar. Use the right power adapter that came with your phone or tablet or other kind of electronics. And the let me actually share the blog post here, which I think is really well done. It is entitled Complete Guide to Using the Correct Charger or Power Adapter and What Happens If You Don't. This is an article from last summer. And if you're like me, if you got a few gadgets and collect them over time, sometimes you wind up with a lot of different power adapters, and they don't always stay with the appropriate tool. and you're wondering if you can use any adapter, and that's not always the case. So here's a great article and gives a brief explanation on electricity, which is kind of important in this case, talking about voltage, current, resistance, gives a little tutorial on the AC-DC adapter label, all that fine print and what all that means. Talks a little bit about some of the symbols you might see on them and what they mean. And then what happens if you use the wrong adapter. Let's say you have the wrong polarity, or the voltage is too low, or the voltage is too high, current too low, current too high. So even if, and one of his encouragements is, even if the plug fits, it may not be the thing to use. It could actually damage the device or not charge as expected. I actually had that happen with the Nexus 7 because Nexus 7s kind of like to have the exact right voltage and current and everything just as they sent it in the box, and I tried to use a non-standard charger, and even though it said it was charged, I was finding that, boy, this seems to be discharging really fast. And doing a little searching on the internet, found that the Nexus 7 is one of those devices that really needs to have the appropriate adapter, power brick, whatever, and varying from that could create unexpected results. So that's just one experience in my own use of power adapters and such, that it's kind of important to use that that same adapter. So that's just a tip of the week and a good blog post here that explains a little bit more if you're interested in trying to match up all that good information there. So,
you know, Martin, I have a good podcast I could point you to where they talk about using washi tape. It's really colorful, and you can identify all your different electrical.
Plugged into the right
device. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Like 2 weeks ago.
Imagine that.
On our very own Wells Tech podcast.
So, my turn for a tip, and I'm going to point you to Weather Underground, a weather site that's actually got a feed from our very own Martin Luther College. So check out the show notes for a link to the MLC page on Weather Underground. The good folks in the science department have a full-fledged weather station operating at MLC, and they even have the feed to the webcam, which is like exactly the view that I have out the window looking out on the front circle at MLC outside the offices there. So you can stay in touch with Martin Luther College weather and webcam right here from Weather Underground. They have a mobile app, and you can find MLC on that as well. So pretty cool, prestigious thing for our very own Martin Luther College.
Looks like a nice day, although a little humid.
It's a bit cloudy and, humid, but we are not complaining.
No. Jason, you have a tip for us?
Yeah, I do. My tip is, I don't have a screen share or anything to show anybody, but my tip is I've got graduations coming up this week and last week and the week before. The best camera is the one that you've got, and more often than not, the best camera that people have is the one that comes right in their pockets. They've got their phones that they use. So I have a couple of tips for just taking better pictures with your phone. A lot of them have the pinch to zoom kind of a thing, and I would encourage you not to do that, because that really is going to degrade the quality of the picture that you get. So instead of doing the pinch to zoom, zoom with your feet, I like to say. Try and get as close as you can to the things you're trying to take a picture of, and if that's not possible, still take it all the way zoomed out, because chances are you have a really good camera. A lot of megapixels on the camera that you're using, and you don't have to fill up the entire frame with what you want to capture. So crop rather than zoom to get the best pictures that you can take with that. So that's my tip of the week.
Very good. Great advice. Great advice. Zoom with your feet. Jason, you want to lead off for our picks of the week?
Yeah, sure. Following up with my photography theme for everything, I am a huge advocate and I love putting my pictures into Google Plus. And kind of a side benefit of putting your pictures into Google Plus is you get these things called Auto Awesome, which is just super cool. I think it's just super, it's just so much fun. So you have it set that your pictures can automatically be backed up from your phone into Google Plus, and this will work with any kind of a smart device that you have your Google account connected to. So I have it on my phone, I've got it on my tablet, my iPad, you know, it'll work with all of those. But then what happens when you put these together, it'll take videos, and it'll take, you know, that's really loud on my end. I don't think you guys can hear it, but no, that's okay. But it takes videos, it takes stills, it adds little music to them, things like that. So just makes it really cool and easy to, you know, just kind of a neat way to share things that you've captured with your phone, and you know, just a really fun way to add a little pizzazz, I guess, to your pictures.
So with the title Auto Awesome, that means that you didn't do anything for it to present your pictures and slide in the slideshow kind of format, right?
That's
Google's
exactly
thinking
it.
For you, huh?
Yes, Google does the thinking for me. So like there are a couple of times I took pictures of my kids outside in the snow, and Google just detected, oh, there's a lot of white on here. It must be outside in the snow. So it added moving snowflakes and put those out and just added that layer. Or you know, if you take a bunch of pictures in succession, it'll take the best of all of those. Like, you know, if you're taking a group shot or something like that, it'll kind of combine everything together so that you have the best shot that you can. You know, maybe somebody wasn't looking for this one, but they were looking for this one, and it'll kind of take all of those and combine them and just automatically make them awesome, which is super cool.
Very
that
good.
Is awesome. And I've seen this. It really does work. It's amazing how well it works.
So. It really is.
Almost scary. Okay, Sally.
My turn. And I don't have a whole lot to say. Maybe you guys can supplement me. But I was super excited to find the WeVideo.com site. And that's because video editing has moved to the cloud in a serious contender kind of format in this product. And so you no longer have to have a huge robust machine with a whole lot of memory and space and financial investment in software. You can actually use a cloud-based tool, a Web 2.0 tool called WeVideo.com to edit and publish videos. I think this is a real breakthrough for schools using Chromebooks, for instance, and other devices where you just can't have that software locally, are just an affordable breakthrough. I think they do have a pro version or multiple plans. You can get school licensing and things like that, but you can get started and try out WeVideo for free and then go premium for as little as $3 a month. So, very affordable option in cloud-based video editing at WeVideo.com. Do you have experience with it, Jason?
Yeah, I've used it a little bit. And the really nice thing about it is that it's also, you can integrate it with your Google Apps. So you can use that for granting access and licenses and things like that if you subscribe to it, which is really nice. And then the other part of it that's really cool is that they also have apps. So it's not just cloud-based for the editing. You can also use a WeVideo Android app, and I don't know if there's one for iOS or not, but and they're both equally useful and powerful. So glad that you brought that one up, Sally, because that's a really great resource and something that people should be using.
Thank you.
I'm seeing it, you know, the dawn of a new age here where app makers are seeing gaps where, especially in educational space, and you know, this is probably thanks to Google more than anybody else, but you know, these platforms that really can't rely, at least economically, on a traditional hard drive based model where they're putting the stuff in the cloud. It just makes more sense, and making it subscriptions, and they can make a living at building these apps in the cloud, even if they're a little bit less fully functional, because in the educational space you're starting at a much lower level anyway. You're teaching the kids this stuff. So YouTube does have some video editing, although I think I've looked at WeVideo before and I know that it's a little bit more full-featured. But if you're just even wanting to get started, YouTube does provide some editing capabilities where you can crop and slice, splice and those kinds of things. So,
excellent.
Cool. Good pick.
Martin, you have a pick for us as well.
Of course I do. My pick, I'll have to give props to Lee Hitter this week, because he reminded me of my pick. I played with this a little bit before, but not seriously. Duolingo, Duolingo. A while back, I had spent a year with Rosetta Stone trying to learn Spanish. Duolingo is kind of a Rosetta Stone for free. The story behind Duolingo is very interesting, and we'll include a link in the show notes, because there is the inventor of Duolingo, his name is Louis von Ahn. He is at Carnegie Mellon. He is the inventor of CAPTCHA and ReCAPTCHA. So he's big into crowdsourcing, or using large numbers of people to do computations. And if you know anything about ReCAPTCHA, this video is a TED Talk where he talks about CAPTCHA and ReCAPTCHA, and also the launch of Duolingo. But ReCAPTCHA is the ability to help, using that CAPTCHA, that's the characters you have to type in to let the form know that you're a human versus a computer. And with ReCAPTCHA, they've taken all these scans of books, and they're trying to increase the accuracy by having people look at the scans themselves and try and type in what they think it says. And if enough people type it in, they're pretty sure that this scan says this. With Duolingo, same kind of deal. But we get the benefit of using Duolingo because it will teach you a language along the way. And it's extremely well done and professional, professionally designed. I can just jump in here and show you how the Spanish lesson looks. So if I click on, so you get an account, it's free. I click on Basics 1, so this would just kind of be starting Spanish. So I'll hit Begin. And then it works similarly to Rosetta Stone, which is kind of a picture and text below it. So it says select translation of the boy. And I've got three options, El Niño, La Mujer, and El Pan. And clearly the one I would pick would be El Niño, because it's got a little picture of the boy. I click that. And it says the name. You probably couldn't hear that. And then I hit check. And it says, you are correct, and then I can click continue. And over time, it obviously gets harder and harder. One thing I like about this approach is it has tips and notes. Rosetta Stone didn't have a lot of that, but this has some grammar. So it talks about masculine and feminine nouns, accent marks, second person singular, verb conjugation. So those of us who've maybe studied languages before and felt, boy, there's something missing there, this provides that little something extra that you can get a little bit more comfortable with the language. So now I've clicked continue, and the next question is select translation of the girl, La Niña, El Agua, El Pan. And I would pick La Niña, of course, and click check. And then it's a gamification as well. So you get points. You can make this more social. If you want, you can see or track your progress. So if you've got friends, you can invite them from Facebook or send invitations. There's all kinds of tests. You can test out of different areas. So if you've maybe had a year or two of Spanish already, you can kind of see where you fit. And then as you go through, you can graduate from one section to another. They have something called immersion. Immersion is an area where you can practice your skills by reading and translating real articles from the internet. And this is where that crowdsourcing concept comes up, where they're going to show you different areas maybe of Wikipedia. And only, let's say, 20% of Wikipedia is in Spanish, so they've got 80% of content out there that they're going to present you, maybe some sentences there where you can translate it and other people can translate those same sentences. And through millions of people doing this, they can get the web, that's the goal, get the web translated into as many languages as possible. So very cool concept, nicely done. Just something that if you're looking to learn a language, you can do that. And they have a number of languages available: Spanish, French, German, Italian, Portuguese, Dutch, Irish, Russian, Turkish, Romanian, Hungarian, and Polish are all out there. So, or some of them are in the works, I think, but a lot of these are, I think five of them are available right now, and then some of these are just kind of in the process. So, interesting stuff. Duolingo.
Yeah, Martin, I think that I should take the opportunity to share a community feedback from Cindy Krieger as a follow-up to that pick. Cindy sent us an email and told us that WordLens is available for free. And I remember hearing about WordLens a long time ago, but it allows you to point your smartphone at a sign in a different language, and it will translate the sign for you to your chosen language. And I think it perhaps has been a free app, but you have to pay for the different language packs. But currently, all the language packs are available for free as well. So you listed all the different language packs. They have German, Spanish, French, Italian, Portuguese, and Russian on WordLens. Now, the reason it's free is because our friends at Google have purchased WordLens. Can you see your Google glasses being able to look at a sign and translate for you what that sign says into your native tongue? So just another interesting development in the language arena, and thanks, Cindy Krieger, for sharing that with us.
Perfect. Yeah, and kind of a follow-up to that one, Sally. there's a Google Translate app it's on Google Play or on the Apple Store, and this one will have that similar functionality with also the added ability for you to write and then it'll speak. So that's kind of cool too.
Really helpful. I've used it in some of my travels to Hong Kong and Japan, where obviously didn't know the language and type something in, then have the phone speak what it is you're asking. Apparently fairly accurate and very easy to use. This WordLens is really cool though, because you can look at a sign, and it'll not only translate it, but it'll try and mimic the typeface,
the font, and everything. Yeah.
So it'll look almost real. Well, like before mm-hmm. your eyes, it's transformed the text into a language that you could understand. So
apparently,
really cool technology.
It's not for those with shaky hands. That's the one review I read, was that you have to hold your camera phone really still in order for it to do it. And it works with the larger things like signs, maybe not so well on text on a page or something like that.
Right.
But interesting technology for
maybe
sure.
A menu, that kind of thing would help with. So.
Okay.
Very good. Let's move on to, I want to talk about ministry resources or community feedback.
We've got some community feedback to share, definitely. And we'll start with a message we received from Jimmy Holub. Jimmy has been a faithful updater of our Wells Tech Wiki. We haven't talked about the wiki in a long time on the show, Martin, but it's basically a resource site where we encourage people over the years to add content, to share their expertise. And we have it organized in a million different ways, and there's a lot of great content here. Unfortunately, over time, it's gotten a little bit out of date, and it's also kind of cluttered with some advertising and things. And we'd like to move our wiki to a new platform. Jimmy wrote to us sharing some ideas about how we might go about doing that. And as it turns out, we were able to share with Jimmy that we are on the verge of launching a brand new media wiki-based Wells Tech Wiki. And actually, Martin, in just a couple of weeks, we're going to kick off our summer series where we're going to go through the wonderful task of migrating all the content from the existing wiki over to the new wiki that will be its replacement. And hopefully in the process we're going to relearn a lot of the great things that are out there stored on the wiki and be able to update the content and also engage our listeners in making the wiki even better than it is currently. So we're looking forward to that, to fill up our summer of 2014 with lots of wiki goodness. So coming soon.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Next up, we heard from Ted Kufall. And, you know, I don't think I have a link up, but Ted wrote to us in following up on our last week's show where Martin talked about phone cases, and he said he's used an OtterBox forever, and he thinks their cases are great, but he cannot recommend Lunatic highly enough. That's a funny web spelling, L-U-N-A-T-I-K. We'll have a link in the show notes. They're only for iOS, but he's had a Tactic Extreme for his iPhone 5 and now has a Tactic Strike for his 5S. They're quite expensive, but they are absolutely terrific cases. So another one to add to your list of cases to consider as you shop for a case for your smartphones. I think Gail actually called in with a comment and spoke about her phone case as well.
Yep, and she was referencing our last week's show. If you wanted to submit a voicemail like Gail did here, just go to the show notes page, and there's a little link on the right side where you could use our speak. It's called SpeakPipe, so it's an opportunity for you to just speak a voicemail to us. You don't have to call a phone number or anything. So let's hear what Gail had to say.
Hi, Martin and Sally. It's Gail Potrat sitting on my deck in the sunshine listening to you. When you're talking about fitness, I guess I should be listening as I'm riding my new bike. But I'm enjoying the sunshine here. Thanks for the tip about phone cases, Martin. Something that I think could be added there, if you take good care of your phone, I've always used a spec case on my iPhones. Last time around, my iPhone 4, I got $165 for on Gazelle when I traded it in. So cases really do matter in resale of your phones as well. Okay, so good point. Also, Sally, great point on teachers keeping things toward licensing and other presentations in a Google site. I'd carry it a step farther. I've always encouraged teachers to keep their lessons online with links. When you create a lesson, create it digitally, and use a wiki or use a Google site, whichever you want to use. You can keep all your resources, your directions, your rubric, even a sample of something all in one place. When you're ready for that lesson, you hook the kids up to it by the link. And you don't want them to see all of them at one time, of course, but great way to deliver lesson material for even elementary teachers. Great podcast. Thanks.
And thank you, Gail, for calling in. We're going to move on then to some links that were shared via Digo. First up, where to find images for your church website. I'm always on the lookout for new stock photography places, and there were a few listed here that I wasn't aware of. So perhaps you want to check this out. I don't think heard of Dreamstime or PhotoL.com. So some new options here if you're looking for imagery for your church or school website, or for presentations for that matter. Someone also tagged an article called Google's Classroom, a Sneak Peek. Google Classroom is something that was announced by Google. You can apply to get access to it. It will be rolled out in the fall, so you could begin using it for your classroom learning management system, basically. And this is some people that have access, and they're giving you a little bit of the behind the scenes of how Google Classroom is working for them. They even recorded a Hangout to discuss it, apparently. So check that out if you're interested in learning more about Google's Classroom tool, which was recently announced.
Have you played with that at all?
I don't have access to it yet, but I'm on the list, and hopefully it'll come up this fall for sure.
Cool.
Okay, one more from Digo. This is something I actually came across as I was looking at my Google account. They have an inactive account manager. Maybe we've talked about this before, Martin. I don't remember. But basically, this is kind of a safety net if something were to happen to you, where Google monitors your account, and if there's zero account activity for a period of time, and you specify, if 1 month passes and I have not logged in or interacted with my Google account at all, then send this message to my trusted contacts. And in the message, you can actually give them access to different parts of your account if you choose to. So this would basically be a safety net if you were injured or passed away. that other people could get access and manage your account for you. And I thought it was worth considering and perhaps setting up on your account.
Is that in a specific area of Google? Google Apps or just Gmail or where is it?
You can give them access to your Plus Ones, your Blogger account, your Drive, your Gmail, your Picasa Web Apps and Albums, and your YouTube account. So those are the options that you can choose to give people access to.
So it's not on the Google Apps side, it's on the personal Google
Correct.
Side.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, we had an email from Pastor Rob Gunther up in Kenai, Alaska, and he used a website called Fiverr.com. And there you can put out your need for a graphic design or other things like online marketing or writing or animation, lots of different categories. And for as low as $5, you can have someone contract to do your design for you. He shared his success with a logo for their soccer camp this summer. So this logo he obtained through Fiverr.com for $5. And, you know, I think all of us could probably do a little bit of basic design stuff. I'm sure Pastor Gunther could have come up with something that would have been useful, but it's nice to be able to unload a little bit of that responsibility. He got a T-shirt design as well as a variation of it for a postcard that they're going to send out about their soccer camp. So great find, Pastor, and thanks for sharing that. And one more, just to mention that there's activity over on the Wells Tech Listserv. That's our email group where you can tap into all the technology knowledge across the Synod. This was a message that came out this morning from Mike Wisniewski, and he was asking about going paperless in your congregation and how different people are handling that. And already there's been several responses. There'll probably be more and a good discussion around this topic. So if you're interested, use the link in the show notes to the Wells Tech Listserv.
Very good. If you'd like to submit your own feedback, we would really appreciate that. And it's so easy to do. Just go to wellstech.wells.net and leave a comment there to one of the shows in the show note on the show notes page there. WellsTech@wells.net is an email that we monitor and would encourage you to take advantage of, as well as Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, Digo. All of those places are places that we look at and call out great stuff from you guys. So please take advantage of that and add your contribution to that part of the show. Next week, Sally is headed east.
I am. I'm going to be in lovely Waukesha and ultimately Jackson, Wisconsin, as Martin and I will both be presenting and doing the podcast from the Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School Tech and Teach event. It's an in-service teacher event scheduled for next Tuesday, June 3rd, and we would love to meet you face-to-face there and actually include you in our podcast or have you stay to be part of our podcast audience. So please plan to join us there. I think the price for the day is only $30, which is, I'm sure, a great price for the amount of information that will be shared. So come and be part of Wells Tech.
Very good. We have one question in Under the Wire, just in time, and great that Jason's still hanging in there for us. This from George Kellerman. He says, sorry I'm late, busy doing principal stuff. Google Apps for Education question. Is there an easy way to verify domain ownership through FinalWeb? Is there a better avenue for this question? Thanks for the help. So apparently, when you sign up for Google Apps, you have to verify your domain. And I know I did this a long time ago, and I don't remember the exact steps for this process. I didn't remember it being hard, maybe just code put on a home page, as I recall. Jason or Sally?
Yeah, I would just recommend contacting FinalWeb Support, and they walk you right through the whole process. Yeah. You can do that through their 800 number. I believe it's 395-3940.
Did you do that from memory?
Yeah, I've sent that out to a few people over the years. So I believe that's the correct number. And it's on their website, and you can also submit a support ticket through their website. So it's best just to let them help you through that process. And they've done it for many people, so it's not a difficult thing.
Never mind, Jason. You could have left, you know, 20 minutes ago.
We're glad you stayed. We need your sunshine.
That's right.
By the way, thanks, Jason, for joining us. We really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. You don't get paid for this in any way, shape, or form, but you bring it every time. So.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad that you're not disappointed.
Yeah. We do have a featured video, and we've been doing our YouTube playlists, which is kind of a substitute for different things that we've done at the end of the show. But our featured video is in our Wells Musicians YouTube playlist, and that is one of our favorites, Michael Schrader, his song Paradise. So take a look for that link in the show notes page and enjoy the beautiful music of Michael Schrader. Once again, Sally, Jason, thanks for your time and your expertise. Look forward to seeing you, Sally, in a short few days. And join us again next week. We'll be on location at Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School, and should be fun. Do some giveaways, meet some interesting people, and have a neat show. So join us next week, 4 o'clock Central. If you don't get to join us live, please download the audio or video at your leisure and join the conversation. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.